And Programming at WEFT is brought to you by Common Ground Food Co-op. Common Ground is making some changes to their hours, and their departments will affect shoppers. For more information, please visit commonground.coop. And remember, we're all in this together. Good words, good advice.
This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champagne, 90.1 on your FM dial. I am aware that some people are not familiar with the rail trail, and also it doesn't seem to be have a lot of people on it. So I want to do a field trip that's not necessarily a simulation of a field trip, but I want to take you in a motorized vehicle to various sites and discuss them and give you a chance to assess the economic value of this sort of corridor, plus its community interaction, as well as its recreational and preservation opportunities and its place in the community. We have very few of these trails in East Central Illinois, partially because the soil is so rich for agriculture. But these trails are all across the country. Many of them are on abandoned railroad beds that are not necessarily main lines. The railroad main lines are still doing very well, and they're expanding. 1 gallon of gas, 500 miles, 1 ton of freight. So they're cheaper, and they're, once the infrastructure is built, they're they're fairly permanent. Principle behind this is that the rail banking people were afraid they were losing too many rails, and they noticed that the hike and bike people were buying trails, and they decided that they could use the hiking and biking and biology to justify another public use of railroads that were being abandoned. There are perhaps somewhere between 20 and 30,000 miles of these rail beds. They're very, very popular. Both political parties enjoy them and support them. Finance comes partially from the federal government, the state government, and a lot of local support. Whether that be conservation groups or people who want to see attributes like toilets and tables and seats or other facilities along the line. The trails are wide, and that meets varying requirements. So if you're going to get Department of Transportation money, it comes with Department of Transportation rules. If you're going to come with natural history, that is from Departments of Natural Resources. And then there's bicycle units that require a certain width of a trail so that two bicycles passing can pass without crashing into each other. We have federal, state, and local regulations, and the locals who are interested in this procedure have to buy the bed, and the feds will save the bridges, which are expensive to replace, and they usually come out for liability reasons. So Save the Bridges, they provide money for the development of the trail, and they quiet titles that are a long-standing agreement with the railroad that when the railroad ceases, reversionary clauses can't be completed because this is one more public use. The quid pro quo for the federal government is that the railroad can come back onto that corridor if it is needed. They have to buy it back from the locals who bought the trail. There are rules of the game that include construction details and things like that. So, the Kickapoo Trail is being built in phases, and three of those phases have already been built. The first phase is between Urbana and St. Joe, about 7 miles. The next phase was an extension of that corridor through St. Joe. And the third phase was a section in Oakwood, Illinois, which is near to Danville. The next phase will probably be the establishment of a trail on a high bridge that's 100 feet high, a quarter mile long. So I want to put you in a motorized vehicle and take you to some of these sites and give you an idea of what is there. You don't have to walk or ride the trail. Sometimes this program will be for people who are not able to walk or hike or bike the trail, but they're very supportive, and it might be disabled or older. But they're interested, and they should know. There are some extensions of this sort of trail to Champaign and even to Monticello and Decatur that we would like to be interested in. I'm going to start you at the west end. That's the Urbana end. And there are several starting points. Officially, the trail ends at Main Street. That's the 7 miles from St. Joe. And at Main Street, you join a very narrow road into Urbana with a bend in it. It's not very good for bicycles or hikers. About a mile down the road, the Urbana Park District had kindly put in a visitor center in the sense of toilets and tables and chairs and parking facilities. That site has mostly been a starting point for most formal uses. The site is just opposite Smith Road, and it's on a Weaver Prairie. And the Weaver Prairie provides adjunct space for interested visitors who want to stop off and see a prairie. It's probably about 15 acres, has a pond, so it has some wetland and some dry land. It also has some old growth trees. There was a native pond there. It was somewhat wet. So you have a nice starting point. But still, the connection at Ray Street is awkward. In the long run, it may even need lights to make sure people can get across the road. There is an alternative about half a mile further along. The trail crosses the road of 130 runs north-south, going south. And many trail users, the ones coming from St. Joe, for instance, don't go on to the last half mile. They go into Walmart parking area, and Walmart has provided space on the northwest corner for people to park. So that is a secondary starting point. The junction between 130 and 150, which goes east-west, is fairly big, fairly wide, and it is serviced by lights. But it's a little daunting to cross it. So the starting point there has signs to list the rules of the game, and it gives you a chance to either turn around if you're coming from Chinjo or starting at that point. The other quarter of a mile or half mile going back to the Main Street was a very nice prairie. It has been my hope that some of that prairie would remain. It's not always realized that that was a prairie and that the parallel interurban also had prairie on it. But I did talk to engineers. They were cautious of me because I had worked at Airport Road and asked if there was a species list for a remnant prairie that was being removed. And that resulted in prairie plants being and prairie soil being taken to a Pisotum rest stop on 57. And that wasn't a happy situation for contractors because the Natural History Survey was asked to provide a species list, and that took some days, and that curtailed construction activity for a while. So I poked around at 1:30, and I think may have had some effect on there being left some of the prairie. When the trail was being opened or started, there were trees donated for that site, and I thought that was rather mean because the trees shade out the prairie, and I think it should have been well known that this was a prairie site. But that's part of the reason why I'm doing this program, is because people don't always realize the elements involved. There is another potential starting point. The trails are owned by the Forest Preserve District in Champaign County and the Vermilion County Conservation District in Vermilion County. So the Forest Preserve owns a half mile of railroad bed that goes back towards Urbana that could be an extension of the trail across Main Street and toward the yards. If you should go back to University Avenue and MTD building, the MTD headquarters and bus parking places have been built on what was a railroad roundhouse. So there's a lot of space there, and the yards are adjacent to the remaining Norfolk Southern yards. This was the headquarters of a Big Four organization, and the yards have been retained. The element between Urbana and Danville, which was more recently owned by Conrail, is the area that we're talking about for Kickapoo Trail. Kickapoo State Park is at the eastern end of this trail. The yards are still kept because this railroad bed, owned by now by Norfolk Southern Railroad, goes from Urbana to Champaign to Mahomet to Farmer City to Bloomington. The portion between Bloomington and Mansfield, near to Farmer City, has been abandoned and will be a similar trail. The portion between Urbana and Mansfield is, however, active. It mainly takes out grain from Cargill or Anderson's on Route 150 west of Champaign. They have big yards and take out grain trains that are maybe up to 150 cars long. That complement of grain is turned north or south onto a Norfolk Southern line that runs towards Chicago and back down towards Pement to meet with the Wabash. So the yards in Urbana are still used for storage, and they also service small agencies like the Dart Company, which replaced Solo Cup Organization. And the rails deliver 4 cars of plastic in summertime for the making of cups, and that would have to be replaced by 13 semi-trailers, and the cost is much lower. So having the yards to service is a help and economically feasible. The yards have a road around the north portion, which could be used to extend the trail. You imagine that you can arrive with a bus that has a bicycle shelf on it. The bicycles could ride there themselves, and people can walk in. And I imagine that there is enough parking space that parking could be shared by a vehicle. In the long run, that is a site where a trail could be extended across University Avenue and over the Boneyard, along Kerr Avenue and around Busey Woods and to Champaign. So we're looking for those sorts of connections, and we're looking for safe connections. This is a place where you could go to Ambucks Park and perhaps have a bridge over University, or have a light that bicycle and hiking people could use. So we're at the MTD building, and we would like to consider the buying of or renting of land to the north side, which doesn't appear to be used too much, and vehicles do use it now. So it could be extended to that 1 mile pigtail that yards usually keep when they close the line nearby. They do that so that the train can be backed up onto that 100, onto that mile, and then can be shunted into sidings for the parking of vehicles and the sorting of vehicles. Unfortunately, in this situation, Smith Road has cut that one-mile pigtail in halves. And the second half, the easterly half, is still intact, and it meets up with the forest preserve half, that, and the two meet at a place called Dobbins Drive. It's thought that this corridor could be converted to a trail. If the pigtail is still needed for railroading, short as it is, it could it is possible to have a trail adjacent to a railroad. The railroad right away at that point would probably be about 100 feet wide, so you have space on an adjacency to put a trail. That would allow Norfolk Southern to retain that mile. They don't know what's going to happen commercially. If something important went in and they wanted to use that corridor, they could do an interim trail agreement with the federal government to preserve that corridor as a trail and buy it back if necessary. So Norfolk Southern can either sell or rent or make an agreement. Smith Road is not an awfully wide road. There's a set of lights right there that would make it a safe crossing for hikers and bikers. And you would take that mile all the way down to Main Street and cross, and perhaps in the future there could be lights there to allow a safe crossing. That would allow people to, coming from St. Joe, to go across 130 and follow what was a prairie to Main Street, and then from Main Street to Dobbins Drive, and then on to Norfolk Southern Pigtail into Smith Road, and from Smith Road around the north end of the yards to the MTD building, where you could come in by bus or car or bike or hike. That particular start to the trail is only speculation at the moment, but it's a real possibility. May not happen quickly, but it's there. So on my field trip, I want to stop you there so you can see that area, walker around the site, and see how you might be able to support this sort of concern. So we do need to get to Champagne, and there are various ways of getting through various streets, and there are also various ways of getting across University Avenue, and we hope too that that will happen. The corridor from Main Street into Urbana is a different cat. It provides people with an opportunity to get to downtown Urbana, and that's somewhat different from the taking of the alternative to the MTD building, the mass transit building. It doesn't stop people from using the mass transit building, but we do need, in the long run, to connect these trails together so that there's some contiguity between Danville, Champaign-Urbana, Monticello, and Decatur, and also between Champagne and White Heath, and a jog to the side to go up to Mansfield and to Bloomington. We're not including the Bloomington line in this field trip, but we would find that a real possibility also. Many of the people who are traveling on these trails are traveling on mountain bicycles, and they want to stop and find out what your particular burg is doing and why and how it was settled. And, they're interested, curious, and they bring tourist money. If they're going to eat, they're going to go to your restaurant. If they're going to buy bicycle repair equipment, they're going to find a bicycle repair shop. So these trails are bringing communities together. They, in the case of St. Joe, it's close enough to Champaign-Urbana that St. Joe can be a bedroom community for people who want to use their bicycle to get to work in Champaign-Urbana. There are people who benefit from this, and there's also very friendly, and there's real precedence across the nation and indeed across the world for this sort of thing. Other countries have really interesting trails from time in place to place. So we're going to start. Let us start at Walmart on 1:30, and you're still on a little rolling piece of Yankee Ridge. So the first move is up the hill a little, and the trail is marked with markers so that you'll know how far you've gone and how far you want to go. There's on the north side of 150, which is just 100 yards away across 150, there's residentials, and those people are interested. They're close to the trail, and just nearby is Arby's. There's a Banner post office out there. So there's a center of activity here that you're just leaving, going up this gentle hill. At the end of the mile of residential, there's a power line that crosses the railroad line. It's a heavy-duty line. It's surveilled by helicopter, and it actually, the helicopter can carry a chainsaw that will remove trees that can sometimes short to a power line and cause fires. There's a need for a parking lot there sometimes, and we would like to have a parking lot because even if you don't use the trail, it has been rich in prairie, and biologists like to stop and check things out without having to walk in half a mile to find the location. So an occasional pull-off is rather helpful. The south side of the interurban, of the main line, is an interurban. Main line went in the 1850s, and the interurban came with electricity in the early 1900s. The roads and the interurbans followed the main line trains. The trains brought people first, then the roads, then the interurbans were like a one or two car tram that serviced the small communities. This is a corridor that is servicing small communities. This is not Wicker Park in Chicago, heavily urban, at 6 o'clock at night. If you're a hiker, there are so many bicycles that you could be knocked over. This is rural, and you don't expect to see a lot of use, but it is, comparatively speaking, for a rural trail, well used by bikers and hikers and by biologists. This area between Habana and Cottonwood, the next section road, and further to Mayview, another section road, was rich in prairie and was used by ecologists as a site for teaching and for research. One of the students involved went to Washington and created the Nature Conservancy. So there's history in here. And just across the field is the John Deere factory. It's not a factory, it's a sales unit. But it reminds us that much of our prairie was lost to John Deere's plows. And so there's another little piece of history there. Behind Walmart, there's a drain that has been dug in on the interurban. And that crosses under the route that we're talking about, under 150, and runs down the north side of 150, and then cuts across the field and under 74 to meet up with the Salt Fork Creek. There are a number of square bends in this procedure, and if you know about how water works, it doesn't usually make square bends, which means that you have to maintain riprap. It's easier and cheaper to go across a road at right angles, but really water runs in a sigmoid manner. But if you're on Cottonwood and you want to go north as a side trip, you can go north to Treeley's Woods. It's owned by the University of Illinois and is not open to the public, but you get an idea of what the Big Grove was about. And if you're interested in that and the Blackberry School, and you can go to the next section road north and then go west to Brownfield Woods, which is another part of Big Grove. But coming back to the section between Cottonwood and Mayview, rich in prairie, and the interurban was also rich in prairie. When the interurbans retired in the 1950s, because vehicles, cars, and trucks were getting to be more convenient, then the interurban remained, because that interurban corridor was providing small communities with their first electricity. And so those corridors are electrical corridors owned by the company that provided the electricity for the interurbans. We would like to think that that could be a cooperative event for a prairie, because prairies didn't have many trees on them, and the power companies don't like trees because they're short. So in a cooperative agreement, the prairie could come back under the interurban. The corridor is not as wide as the mainline corridor, which is probably about 100 feet. The interurban is more like 37 feet, a narrow corridor, but it's still rich in prairie. When you come to the Mayview intersection, there's a cemetery, and it's on a little knoll as part of the Yankee Ridge Moraine, and a prime place for a cemetery where you can visit your relatives and be a little higher and drier. Mr. Fools, who owns the elevator down the road, has the Fools family plot that you can stand there and look through the headstones and see the Fools elevator. So we do have that sort of history. Mayhew was a small town with an elevator, about every 5 miles. The elevator was taken down, obsolete wooden elevator. We preserved the wood and sold it as firewood for so much a wreck. And that was in a cooperative agreement with the demolition person. The trail continues on to Fools. If you want, you can go north to other sites. So you can also think about following the Lincoln Trail, which is labeled. And the Lincoln Trail is where Lincoln was a lawyer representing people on a circuit. At Fools, there is at least one residence still there, but it's a very small community. And the elevator's there by itself. It's very friendly. It's adjacent to the trail. You have to think about this being a site that you would like to educate people about their agriculture. In the busy season, the grain is being loaded there and shipped by road to another railroad line further south. But at one stage, when this railroad was being abandoned, Fools was considering keeping the railroad active between Fools and Abana in order to take out grain by rail. They didn't do that because in order to do that, they had to have a rail into the elevator, and they would have to move an electric pole, and that would have cost a lot of money. So that thought passed. The corridor for the next section moves out a little to the north. It's just a small jog. You have to wonder who decided to make that jog, and it may have been because there were houses in Fools, but it's interesting to speculate. There's good prairie along the line. We have to consider how the soil is dealt with. In this case, not only was there a rail trail to be installed, but there was also a widening of the road, and the widening of the road is seldom taken out of the farm fields to the north of 150. It's taken out of the railroad right-of-way. So the right-of-way in some places is narrower than it used to be. And you have less prairie and you lose some of the prairie. Some of the prairie goes to the forest preserve in Homer, and it will contain seeds that can grow. On the south side of the bed between Fools and further east is a drainage ditch, which also helps to preserve the prairie. The drainage ditch is not mown, and the prairie gets to preserve itself there. The railroad line takes a slight bend to the south. It's near to a fairly modern hybrid grain processing company on the north. So it's a good indication that there's a road. The road followed the railroad line, as usually did. And the train, the railroad, probably crossed the Salt Fork Creek at a node. If you have a meander, the areas of amplification are usually moving. The node is a safer place for a train to cross. So the road cross and the urban cross, all at the same place with three different bridges. The big meander space to the north has been planted to is wetland and not very good for agriculture, and it's been planted to native trees by soil and water conservation people, and it will mature as a bottomland forest. The road that accompanied the trail jogging a little to the south is sort of at an angle, but it has been mowed for many years. But it is remnant prairie, and we're very interested in that remnant prairie and how it might come back to show us what a remnant prairie was like. So there's a temptation to look at it as rather disabled prairie and deserving of additional seed, but we would like to see that that area remains as a remnant prairie that's coming back. Just before you go across the river, there's a little road that goes south to what was a policeman's retreat. There's a signage, so you get to understand what the history of the area is, and also the rules of the game. The bridge is remodeled using prefabricated units that are probably about 30 feet long with established fences, and they're welded to the I-beam, which is the railroad bridge, in this case a fairly new railroad bridge, and the crossing of the river is possible. It's also a fun place to look over and look at fish in the stream. It is a fishing place. But the trail runs into St. Joe, past the physical plant area, and into their Main Street area. Interurban followed, but with a slightly different route, and that can be followed. The trail for a period stopped there, but it has been extended to the east side of St. Joe. But then there's been a huge development on the east side, on the north side of 150. And there's been a tendency to take very good prairie between the east side of old St. Joe and a S-shaped bridge that goes over the Union Pacific. That corridor, again, like the one in Urbana, is rich in prairie, and we have almost no prairie left. And I would hope that the community could learn enough about prairie to reconstruct the prairie and not feel the need for constant mowing. It's a syndrome, it's a part of the culture, but we also need to think about the prairie. If you stand on that bridge that goes over Union Pacific, you can look to the east and you can see the main line and the interurban and the 150. And in between all those, there is good prairie. There's at least prairie soil. And we would like to think about what we can do to have a slightly narrower trail so that this could be a prairie preservation site. Let's look at how a trail is developed. First of all, all the rails are removed, and we did a segment on railroad removal and demolition. So ties are removed, and then 8 inches of gravel is put on top, mainly to quiet any possible creosote. And that goes down the side, so that's fairly invasive of the prairie, but it's safe. And on top of that is crushed limestone, which provides the basis for an all-weather trail. At the intersections, the trail is carved down so that where the trail, the railroad was on an elevated mound to protect it from poor drainage, then the road that crosses it has to go up and over, and that's kind of dangerous. So when you have a bicycle trail, you take that down and proceed to have signage there so that bicycles and people can watch out for traffic. As we go further east, we come to Ogden. And Ogden is another small town. It had a spur line to a Homer Lake, an old Homer Lake area, where settlement, probably early with settlement coming up the streams. But the settlement was around the Salt Fork Creek. But then when railroads came, a railroad came to a mile south of Homer Lake. And the frame houses were skidded across the snow to the new Homer. Brick houses didn't go. The covered bridge didn't go. The cemetery didn't go. The county fairground didn't go, or the Homer fairground. But there was an opportunity for races and park activities. There was a small dam, and it was a popular place. So that can be visited if you're interested. And if you're more interested yet, you can go back west again a few miles, to the new Homer Lake, where there was a dam installed and a waterway and a biology center and a center for activities. It's very well used. You can canoe on it and have quiet motor boats at times, but not powerful motor boats. So they're adjunct fields. Going out of Ogden, you go up a little rise and you cross over the county line. And that again is rich in prairie. It's near Rumpler, which is a little burg that was in existence with an elevator that was a square elevator. The square elevator is still there. Go a little further and you come to Route 49. And at 49, there's a fairly big elevator and also a farm chemicals distribution center that also used the railroad, and so did the elevator. And you can see the remains of the railroad is across 150. If you have an imagination, you can find on the south side of the road some areas that were where there were booster stations. The first interurbans were run on direct current, so you had to have more booster stations. Later, when AC was installed, you didn't have to have so many booster stations. We get to Phythian, and Phythian is has a huge elevator, and it has a wooden elevator, which is historic, with half a dozen legs, and it has an interurban station. Oh, no, there are very few interurban depots that have been preserved, and a couple in Phythian has bought it and restored it and put in copper downspouts, and they put in an addition which relates. The interurban had a two-story segment that was used for a power booster, and you can see that the oval holes where the power lines from the catenary, which was used by the interurban, go in and is boosted and goes out the other side. Going a little further towards Muncie, you come to the fringe of the coal area. Underneath Vermilion County, there are faults that in the Carboniferous era grew plants that have become compressed into coal. So there has been deep mining there and followed by strip mining. At Muncie, there used to be gob piles. Gob piles are where overburden is brought out of the mine and stacked. And they're kind of intriguing because the sulfur and other elements in the overburden are exposed to oxygen and the weather and create a yellow, red, brown color. Those have been removed by the EPA, don't exist anymore. There's a Jordan Creek that comes down and used to go under the railroad line, under 150, and on into their tributary of the Salt Fork. That meander that was converted into to not include the meander, to cut off the meander, but it meant that the stream ran parallel to the railroad line, and there was a right angle bend, which is a prime candidate for needing riprap to preserve it. There's a lot of erosion at that point because water doesn't make square bends easily. There is a bridge that takes that Jordan Creek down through to its area near a village area where Natural History Survey people enjoy, because at that point the river runs on limestone, and there was a covered bridge, and there was a race which allowed the water to run a grist mill. A little community, all of its own, but it's the sort of thing that allows people to drop off the trail and find interesting places. The high school is right there. There's between the high school and Bronson, there's some communication with farmers who felt like they could invade that railroad bed, but we wanted to point out that this was part of the acquisition, and it was prairie. Not everyone enjoys prairie. It is what they've been getting rid of for six generations, and it doesn't look exciting, and it also could be a potential for crops. Once we get to Bronson, that's the township place where there's a garage for the township, and there's 1 mile of wonderful prairie there into Oakwood. It's where many people have harvested prairie seed, and it's just so rich in prairie that I would hope sincerely, and so do others, that this would not be destroyed by a very wide trail. Then we come to Oakwood, and the trail sort of has been designed to have curves and goes through Oakwood, where there's been a community mown area and a memorial for World War victims, and on through Oakwood. If you are in the main area of Oakwood, there's a road that goes north to Kickapoo State Park, and there's a road that goes south to Sleepy Hollow Vineyard that provides a site for fundraisers, and it's very helpful. Nearby is farmers. One of them is Kevin Green, who have occupied the area, and they're now growing pollinator crops to try and provide pollination for bees and insects that we need for crops. And I think that may be enough for now. And thank you. This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT, Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. We are streaming online at weft.org. And you can go to our website to find out lots of things happening, including COVID-19 updates, different health tips, closings, and of course, everything you need to know about WEFT.
This is WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to a pre-recorded show of Shruti, music from the Indian subcontinent.